Good morning. Welcome to the Roundtable. Great to have you with us this morning. And we have a wonderful panel, and we have a lot to talk about. So we will stir, mix, and enjoy and get started. It is the 30th of July, and 14 minutes past 9 o'clock. Let me introduce the panel. A reminder, you can join us at panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here.
You got me first today, didn't you?
I know. I'm going to do that. Yesterday, I forgot. I go down on the list. And then if it's not right in front of me, then my mind wandered.
Well, thank you. I hope we're going to see Libby today because she's not here. And I wouldn't have come if Libby wasn't going to be here.
Well, this is great. I said when I came in the studio that this is a classic edition of the Roundtable panel because all of our originals are here. This is great. Former Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain is here. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you.
Wonderful to have you back and have you on the program.
And I hope everybody knows that Mike Spain is, and everybody knows it who knows him, the single nicest human being who has ever walked the face of the earth.
I'm one of two. Isn't there somebody in the Berkshires
yes.
who you also identify that way?
Greg Ward.
Okay. Well, yeah, he deserves his credit here.
Should get you kids together.
And we should.
Yeah. The nice twins.
Judy is yawning.
I think he's saying that I'm mean.
No.
Well,
no.
A little.
Guy. I'm the nicest guy.
Well, I'm thrilled Judy Patrick is back. She's Vice President for Editorial Development at the New York Press Association. How are things going with the association?
Going well. We're working with all these newspapers trying to save journalism. It's a noble cause. It's really a lot of fun, actually.
Wait, noble. Yeah.
Are
you going to get nominated? I heard you were being nominated for the Nobel Prize.
We were just laughing before we came on air about the fact that anybody can get nominated
for
a Nobel Prize.
That's true. Well, you revolutionary you. And Libby Post is expected to be here. Political consultant. She texted me just a few seconds ago and said, I'm running a tad late, so she will be in shortly. So we will hold her seat and we'll get started. But Libby Post, political consultant to the stars, will be with us in just a moment. All right. Well, there's a lot of really good stories to talk about this morning. The one that is making the headlines, of course, is the Capital One data breach affecting 100 million credit card applications.
That's a lot.
Does that mean 100 million Social Security numbers and bank account numbers are out in the ether for people to look at?
Yes.
Well, that's exactly what that seems like. The Virginia-based bank with a popular credit card business announced Monday that a hacker had accessed about 100 million credit card applications, and investigators say thousands of Social Security and bank account numbers were also taken. Ladies and gentlemen, Libby Post has arrived.
Yeah.
Do you hold a Capital One card?
No, I don't.
What's in your wallet, Libby?
What is Barclays?
By the way, what is Capital One?
It's a bank and a credit card company.
No, okay. And there are 100 million people who...
Look at that.
Oh,
that's
right.
A Capital One card.
So, Judy, I could...
Well, that's a Citibank card.
I could find a little... Citibank
good
is owned
eye.
By Capital One.
See the logo.
I also have Citibank.
Kind of the same thing.
Right.
But from what I read, it's only about 100,000 people had their Social Security numbers taken. Those were small businesses that applied for small business loans through Capital One. That's what they're saying at this point. But as in the case with all these stories, how do you really trust them to tell you everything that they know and to alert you in time?
I've always assumed they had mine for all these years.
I think we should assume that somebody, some odious person or institution has all the information on you, and you could be subjected to some kind of thievery because of it.
The said odious person here is a Seattle area woman, Paige Thompson, who the FBI has arrested on a charge of computer fraud and abuse, according to court records. The hack appears to be one of the largest data breaches ever to hit a financial services firm. In 2017, the credit reporting company Equifax disclosed that hackers had stolen the personal information of 147 million people, making your point a moment ago. Last week, it reached a $700 million settlement with U.S. regulators over the breach.
So, do you think this woman will go to jail for a long, 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 long time just to make an example out of her?
Yeah, because she got caught. There are so many of these guys who never get caught.
And not only that, this one was unique because she was in this country.
And she's a woman. And usually this stuff is not done by women. It's usually
That's right.
guys, as Trump would say, some 400-pound fat guy sitting in his basement, his mother's basement. But, you know, it is unusual.
Or they could
or
be Russian, Russians.
Right.
Yeah.
It is unusual. But
highly unlikely, but maybe.
Yeah. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I get these emails from people saying, I've got your password, and I have you watching porn. Straight
porn. Oh,
that's
porn. A common internet right. Scam. Yeah.
And send me yeah. money yeah. through Bitcoin. And I just, the first time I got it, I sent it to a friend in law enforcement. He said, just hit delete.
Of course.
Yeah.
Thankfully, this woman was erratic enough to brag about it on
the
social media site.
Weird,
so
huh?
that tipped
In fact, the
off.
Name was erratic, right?
Well, her name was erratic.
Yeah,
yes,
her online name was erratic.
Yeah.
And in one online posting, erratic wrote, quote, I basically strapped myself with a bomb vest, blank dropping Capital One's docs and admitting it, according to the complaint.
Say that again. Dropping
Capital One's docs.
Right.
And admitting it.
And what? I want to get it off my server. That's why I'm archiving all of it. LOL. It's all encrypted.
Well, but it demonstrates that somebody with a certain amount of skill can penetrate mm-hmm. these big banks.
Any 17-year-old.
And the vulnerability.
Well, or 12-year-old.
Yeah. Right. Well, in this case, what was she, 34, I think?
But can.
Well, you're absolutely right. And I think that's what's so scary is, to your point, that this isn't a foreign...
it's somebody local.
You know, this is one person who is able to get this information. They say, the FBI complaint, the bank told the Bureau that the data includes likely tens of millions of applications and approximately 77,000 bank account numbers. So you would assume if they caught the person that maybe nothing was done with the information, but then that all still has to be changed, obviously.
It will be interesting to hear if it does come out what her motivation was and whether they were able to determine if she sold it, shared it, posted it, made it available to others to be exploited in the way you just described, or whether she was just doing it because hackers have a kind of – they like to breach security just to say they did it.
And they like to brag.
And evidently brag about it in this case. But you need to be watching your credit accounts. You need to be watching your credit score. I mean, you need to be very active at it. And then you wonder if it's all a ploy to make you subscribe to some of these services that do that for you. It's kind of like virus protection. You know, you wonder sometimes if there are people out there who promote viruses and then somehow benefit from the sale of virus protection, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, and I don't know that as a fact. I'm just saying it's speculation.
Based on other postings allegedly made by Thompson last month, the FBI came to suspect that she, quote, intended to disseminate data stolen from victim entities, starting with Capital One. So
sounds like she had others in
this
mind.
This was a work in progress, apparently. It is... Okay.
You know, we talk about checking your credit card statement, but if you've ever checked your credit card statement, it's difficult to read, and sometimes there are vendors, I don't know who they are. Did I spend 99 cents on Apple Pay for something? It is very hard to decipher.
Yeah, I just got, in one of my credit cards that I use for business, 5 charges from the same company for 53-something, and I called my credit card company, and then I went online, and I realized who it was, and then I emailed the company. Oh, yeah, we made a mistake. It won't happen again. I'm like, yeah, how about reimbursing me for the $250-something dollars?
We made a mistake?
We made a mistake. I got sick. It won't happen again. I'm like, I don't think so.
Yeah, Capital One is saying they're sorry now. Well, you know, sometimes sorry is just not good enough, and in this case, I don't think it's good enough.
Well, also, if you're going through an application process, you know, maybe they're not going to get their business.
Yeah. Right.
This has to be injurious to their business, and if someone was thinking of getting a credit card tomorrow, wouldn't you think that they'd think twice about that?
Yes, although to what you were all saying earlier, doesn't it looks bad for all of these banks? I mean, it seems that most have had issues, right? I mean, no one's coming out and saying, oh, we're 100% safe from this kind of thing. And I would just make a anecdotally, it just seems to me that if Capital One had the means that were available to other banks that they would have used it to keep this from happening.
Well, I mean, as Alan brought up Equifax a couple years ago, Equifax is a credit rating company that would probably service Chase and Capital One and
all of them,
Citibank and all the big credit cards. So, in a way, probably all the information. I don't know this for a fact. I'm speculating. All the information that this woman in Seattle gathered might already have been exposed to a much broader breach in the Equifax one a couple years ago. And you can't get a new credit card number. The only way they die with you, basically.
Oh, Social Security number.
I mean.
Yeah, they do die with you.
You're vulnerable, and we have to live knowing that we're vulnerable. And be vigilant.
And to some extent, we become inured to it all. This is a 1 or 2 day cycle story. It'll go away. It'll be replaced by something else. You know, the Russians are hacking into our election system. So what else is new? And we move on. And it's sad that that's the way we're starting to live now, that we're just becoming, well, this is a fait accompli. This is just the way it is. I just have to be more careful. And some people aren't careful.
Well, yes. And then there's also the Chartakian paranoia, which is for your entire life.
Which is unrivaled.
Yeah. So for your whole life, you've been, by the way, Libby and Mike just gave each other a high five.
High five in the studio.
So you worry that, you know, for your whole life, you put money into your pension and your this, your 401k, and then one day you wake up and,
it's gone.
It's gone.
Well, the other thing, too, and I want to get back to just what Judy said a moment ago about, you know, checking your credit account. We're keeping you up? Okay. Checking your credit account and keeping track of it. The opposite, though, is, and I don't know if this has happened to you, but it certainly has happened to me, where you go and you're sitting down to lunch with a friend and you throw your credit card down and they come back and say, oh, sir, I'm sorry, this card is declined. And you say, oh, what happened?
Humiliating.
No, and it's horrible. And it's always in front of, you know, somebody that you like, if we were with a good friend, they would understand.
It's when
and
you took Sophia Loren out to lunch.
Well,
right?
No, and then invariably, it's because, like, you're in New York, you went across the state lines to Vermont, and it trips the fraud alert.
Exactly.
And the next thing you know, you got to call up the bank, and it's a 40-minute ordeal. And so that does factor into this as well, because there is a point where, for customers, you say to yourself, oh, well, you know what? It's my money. I would like access to it right now.
Well, what you have to do, obviously, I can only tell you this from personal experience, having gone the wrong way, is you have to call the bank before you go to Mexico.
You have to do a travel account.
But it's true.
But going to Mexico is different than going, you know, across the border 12 miles away. I mean, as Judy and I can say, you're back and forth across the state line several times a week. You know, it's just a normal thing.
Has it really happened to you across the Vermont line?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
It happened to me in P-Town.
In P-Town. Oh,
yeah,
P-Town.
In Massachusetts. Yeah. It's like, come on.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's insane.
Well, that's all the result of credit card companies being vigilant about watching out for fraud. And Alan's right. You've got to learn to call before you're going. But you think you wouldn't need to call about Vermont when it's 12 miles
away. But think about this. Somebody steals a billion names. Or a million names.
100 million in this case.
Or 100 million names in this case. Thanks for that accuracy, because that's what makes you a great journalist, Judy.
So I send her to Canada.
Yeah. And
I've got a call now that you've reminded me.
and that means, think about having to make a decision of, you have 100 million accounts that you've just stolen. Which one?
Right. Which one are you going to throw the dart at and see what sticks?
Which one's good? Right. We're going to take a break in just a second. But, when you have a story like this, I was struck by what Libby said of the fact that, it's going to make news for a day or two. If another one happens soon after, that will give it a little
trend.
More fuel. And it'll be there for – we saw that with the Home Depot story when they're
– And it's not like this administration is going to do anything. They've dismantled the Consumer Protection Agency, so they don't care.
But even worse – of course, and this is not meant to be levity stuff, we see a terrible killing of a mass killing.
Right.
And then, you know, now that there have been so many of them, it tends to sort of disappear also.
There's a routineness to it, which is terrible to acknowledge. I mean, there was shootings, of course, in Gilroy, California, and there was a shootout in Brooklyn at a block party.
Yeah.
And these deaths, you know, we just sort of read about them and move on because it's become almost formula.
Shooting in Mississippi this morning at a Walmart. So,
oh, is that right?
Another story this morning. So, yeah, they continue. Let's take a break. When we come back, we will have letters and we'll move on to other stuff right after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. It is the 30th of July, 9:34 in the morning, and we have a wonderful panel, and it's Alan Chartok, Judy Patrick.
How did it get to the 30th of July?
I know. It's almost summer.
It's like we blinked.
Mike Spain is here and Libby Post, and we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org.
Snow will be falling any minute now.
Oh, God. That's true.
I hate that.
But I was thinking about that yesterday, that, you know, we're now almost in August, which means September and fall is along the way. And
that's right.
And that's my favorite time of year.
This is how it all happens.
Yes,
it's just
that's
all very sped up.
It's the story of life.
That's why the Great Northeast will always be my place of residence, because we have four seasons.
We have seasons. Well, it is here we are, and we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Alan has a couple. We'll go to those, then we'll move on to other stuff.
Thank you, Joe. Gail writes, credit cards. I would like to cancel my Capital One card, but if I do, it lowers my credit score. I have a number of cards I'd like to close, but keep them to maintain credit score. Do credit cards conspire to entrap us with cards despite the increased risks this poses? And that's from Gail.
Probably.
I don't get this whole thing.
You don't
thing.
Trust I'm, the banks? Is that what the question is?
Yeah, right. I shouldn't say this, but I've never looked at my credit score ever during this time. Was that wrong?
Well, you've only bought one house? Your house in Great Barrington?
Two.
Okay. And how long ago
Three.
Did you buy your house?
How
long did you buy the house that you're in now?
25.
Okay.
30.
So that's when you look at your credit score. It's when you take out a big loan.
No, I remember the lady at the bank saying to me, I have to check your credit score.
Mm-hmm.
So I said to her, because I've never done it, how is my credit score? She said, excellent.
Right. Yeah.
That was all I needed to know. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay. And that's because of Roselle. And Martin says of credit freeze. Good morning, all. It's very easy to set up a credit freeze with all three agencies. What is a credit freeze? Anybody know? Okay. The only hard part is having to occasionally lift it when applying for more credit.
Oh, that you only have as much as...
Yeah, if credit freeze just means that a credit card cannot be issued or your minimum or the amount you can borrow cannot be changed without your express
permission.
That's
a very good idea, isn't it?
Yeah. It helps with identity theft, data breaches, and someone getting access to your credit report without your permission.
Hmm. Yeah. If you were going to buy a car or buy a house or make a big expenditure where you needed to borrow money, you would need to go in and unlock it. But if it's frozen, they really can't... They can't go in and raise your credit level and then rip that money out of your account.
That's an interesting point.
Yeah, yeah.
And another interesting point is I hope that Ray Graff or Joe Donahue or whoever is responsible didn't put the freeze down here in the studio, because I see Judy is wrapping her arms around herself trying to keep warm.
No, I'm not. I'm fine. Yeah. This is my
This
is my stance.
Okay.
And watch when she stands up.
And Laura says, credit card security. I had a credit card with Bank of America for close to 20 years. This March, a rep called and said they needed to know my occupation. They said something about security. I told them no, and they closed my account. Equifax dropped my credit score 25 points. It was an 803. So I have done the right thing all these years and built good credit. And Bank of America and Equifax can burn me, question mark? Why should I give them one more piece of personal information, since we all know they have not done a good job of protecting our information? And that has three question marks at the end of it. And I would like to just say, how do you know who is on the phone with you? As soon as they call up and say, I want one more piece of information, I say, goodbye.
Right.
Don't you?
Well, yeah, I don't get real chatty with people on the phone about that kind of stuff. Yeah.
And they want these crazy security questions, like, what was your high school mascot? And how was it? It's like, that is really getting down to a personal level. What was your father's middle name?
Or your mother's maiden name?
Well, that one I can actually remember. Some of the ones I have trouble with are the ones that change, like, what's your favorite breakfast food? I don't know. Like, I mean, you know,
I can remember my mother's maiden name. I just can't remember how to spell it.
Oh, well, that is another issue. Yeah, that is another issue. Okay.
You know, Libby, you and I have been down this very road before.
All right, let's go on to other topics, and we'll go to the, hey, there's a big debate tonight. Y'all know that, right? And before you yell at us, we can't run it here on WAMC because it's a CNN event, and they have sole propriety. However, they will be blogging and talking about it, so there will be coverage on our website as the debate happens, and of course we'll have coverage of it following the debate, but we are unable to run the debate because it is a CNN event.
Can I ask about that, though?
Yes.
Because I do think that's in the public interest, and I'm not going to have access to CNN tonight, and so I would like to listen to it on the radio if I could.
That's tough noogies.
Did CNN pay the Democratic Party for this?
I think
this?
They sponsor. I mean, it would be the same thing if we sponsored it, or in your old days, if the Daily Gazette sponsored an event that, I mean, it's difficult for broadcast, but if we were sponsoring it with another organization, say, we would at least run it first and then make it available.
But we would share it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's a higher public. I agree with Judy. There's a higher public interest here to exploit that and make it proprietary the way CNN and NBC did previously in the debate. Seems to me to be not in the public interest.
I'm surprised they don't allow it on either C-SPAN or PBS.
Yeah.
That would seem to be. I understand why they don't give it to MSNBC or somebody else, but you do. But it is interesting that they wouldn't offer it to certainly C-SPAN. But wouldn't solve the radio problem.
For a left-wing, allegedly Trumpian left-wing place of business, CNN, you would think that they would at least share.
Well, and all these entities are going to have a crack at it. NBC had their crack at it the first time. CNN, Fox is going to have one. So it's all – everyone is going to have a take in this as they did 4 years ago. No, of course not. No, I'm just saying that
– This is America.
and rest assured, when you have the debate commission debates following the conclusion of the primaries, then those will be available to all.
Let's hope.
Yes. Well, that has always been the case. Yes. All right. Anyway, there is a debate going on.
You might be able to live stream it.
I think through CNN.
No, you don't have that
ability. I live someplace where there is no...
You're in a desert. You're in a broadband.
Well, I can only say move.
Yeah.
No.
I'm going to follow it on Twitter, which is a good way to follow the snarky comments from everybody.
Yeah. Or like, big websites like the New York Times, Washington Post, they have like regular updates also, and you can
and
just kind of glance at them.
And they are.
They're really, remarkably concise and very... They put perspective on it, and they have... context and everything.
Would you have less respect for me as a commentator if I told you that I'm going to sleep at 7:30 tonight and I'll catch up tomorrow morning?
And I'm going to miss Marianne Williamson because I find her very entertaining.
Yes.
But not serious.
To answer your question, Alan, no. I think as long as you see it when you see it, then it doesn't matter.
Well,
so
that's very kind of you, Joe.
Bernie.
You need your beauty sleep.
Bernie Sanders. Meanwhile, I'm just trying to mention who's on the debate stage. Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Pete Buttigieg, Beto O'Rourke, Amy Klobuchar, John Hickenlooper, Tim Ryan, John Delaney, Steve Bullock, and the aforementioned Marianne Williamson will all be on the debate stage tonight.
John Delaney, the comic?
John Delaney, the presidential candidate. Steve Bullock, who in his photo here in the New York Times is wearing jeans. Okay.
Well, he's from Montana.
Good point, Lib.
So the five candidates on stage Five candidates on stage have a viable and in some cases guaranteed path to a third debate stage in September, but the other five, author Marianne Williamson, Mr. Ryan, Mr. Hickenlooper, Mr. Delaney, and Mr. Bullock, are short of both the polling and donor thresholds needed to qualify. They all know that this debate is their best, if not their last, chance to upend the current dynamics in the race. The incentives for them to be aggressors are strong.
So they have to go for it, in other words. If they don't go for it, they lose, they're out.
But can I ask a question?
I can only hope.
Which is, I understand if they're polling so low. I guess I get it. But isn't that up to the candidate? And where is the democracy where this debate formula is telling us and forcing candidates out of the race as opposed to people?
It's very Trumpian.
Yeah, no, I have an uneasy feeling about it after the revelations of from 2016 that the Democratic National Committee was skewing towards Hillary and trying to block Bernie Sanders and any other candidate who might have come along from taking her out of the front runner position, and it sounds like they're picking favorites here. And Steve Bullock and John Hickenlooper, who are both governors of states that where they're Democrats elected, where there's purple states, essentially, they're being urged to go back home and run against the U.S. Senate candidates in each of those states who are coming up for reelection. And that way they might be able to, have the Democrats take control of the U.S. Senate. And I just wonder if this is how the Democratic National Committee is doing it. They're sort of like edging them out deliberately so they can turn around and urge them to run back home.
And giving them a platform from which to do it.
So that's it, because I've often wondered why these people are doing it. I have no real idea. But that's as good a conspiracy theory as anything, isn't it?
Well, that the party is using them to raise their profile and then push them into Senate races back home, perhaps.
Do you really have the idea that the party is good enough, upright enough to do that?
No. We'll see.
And aren't they some of them auditioning for vice president as well?
Could be.
Cabinet positions. Yeah. They're running for cabinet.
I don't know. When they take a really bad crack at the presumed presidential front runners, you get the idea maybe that that's disqualifying them from being considered later on. Although,
who knows?
Although Lyndon Johnson was hated by JFK, and he knew if he was going to win, he had to have Texas. So there you go.
Biden went after Obama.
Lyndon who? What?
Biden went after Obama in 2008 in that campaign. Obama said, yeah, Hillary's nice enough, and then she became his Secretary of State. I mean, stranger things have happened. This is campaign season. People go after each other, and then it all...
But doesn't that subtract from the credibility of the whole process?
Well, look who's president.
No, I do disagree. Mm. I think that somebody who can reach out and look for the positives in people who they've opposed politically is admirable. I think whoever wins the election, if it isn't Trump, because if it's not Trump, this is unlikely, but if someone else were to win the 2020 elections, it's going to be really important to reach across the aisle and include the others.
Other what? Other Democrats?
Reach across the aisle. If it's a Democrat that wins, across the aisle and try to build some coalitions.
Well, it can only be a Democrat who wins because obviously Trump is going to run, right?
Right.
So therefore,
right. Either a Democrat to be named later, or
so you bring Dan Coats back as the director of national intelligence.
Well, a guy like Dan Coats becomes a very sympathetic figure.
Yeah.
I mean, when you see that clip of him being interviewed when they tell him that Putin has been invited to the White House, that is hysterical. That is really funny.
We're getting into another story here, Joe, but it is amazing that Dan Coats lasted this long. It is stunning to me.
In fact, let's take a break. And when we come back, I owe you a break, right, Mike? I owe you a break.
Debit.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. So let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue, and we'll get into that and other stories as well. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Judy Patrick, Mike Spain, and Libby Post. We welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. I thought everyone knew this, and then we've gotten letters, and so I just want to make sure that people do know that. So that they debate, we didn't mention it, which is why I'm going back to it. They divide the candidates into two groups. So tonight's group, so we got a couple of letters asking, what about Biden? And you forgot Joe Biden. And so, what is happening is that tonight it will be the 10 that I mentioned a moment ago. Marianne Williamson, Tim Ryan, Amy Klobuchar, Pete Buttigieg, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Beto O'Rourke, John Hickenlooper, John Delaney, and Steve Bullock. Tomorrow night, from Detroit, night two of the debate, is Michael Bennett, Kirsten Gillibrand, Julian Castro, Cory Booker, Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, Andrew Yang, Tulsi Gabbard, Jay Inslee, and Bill de Blasio. So that'll be tomorrow's matchup.
It's like listening to your call letters.
Yes, it's a long list. It's a very, very long, very long list.
Except we're proud of our call letters.
And it is also important to note there are what... correct me if I'm wrong here, Mike, 3 or 4 candidates who did not make the debate stage.
That's right, yeah. You still have the billionaire, Steyer. You know, he's not in
good,
there.
Good,
and
good.
I didn't the California guy drop out at one point?
One did.
Yeah.
Stalwell dropped out.
So
I was
struck because Mike said this many shows ago, but there was a time when you used to be able to, if you were in this business, you could just rattle off the names of all the candidates.
It's
now it's much, much harder.
Yes. It's too many.
Much, much harder. I would have, you're like, Inslee? Okay, all right. Oh, I forgot Bennett. All right.
It's like the dwarfs.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
That's however, so I really...
We're the Brady Bunch kids.
Yeah. But speaking of the Brady Bunch kids, I really like how the Times is handling it from a visual point of view on the website.
Isn't this amazing?
I think it's great.
Their graphics are incredible.
That's great. I loved it.
When you scroll down and it's talking about different candidates...
They pop up?
They pop up as images in front of you so you get a visual... connection.
Yeah, unless get to see who these people
looks
are.
Looks like the Marauder's map out of Harry Potter.
It's really, really
clever. Yeah, it's
clever.
Great. Fun. I love it.
Okay, you want these or not?
Yeah.
Okay.
You could do music to that.
Gene says, how to watch. The debates held both evenings at Fox Theater in Detroit will be broadcast on CNN from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're watching online, the debates will be live streamed on CNN.com and CNN's app, cable subscription required for these options, or on, and this is what I'm, I don't know, or on Fubo TV, FUBO. Does anybody know what
Fubo.
That is?
Fubo. It's a streaming service.
Yeah, probably.
But didn't you just say, Alan, that as long as you have a cable subscription where
you can use your
cable provider and your username and password, if you don't have that, if you don't have that cable service, you can't log in and watch it on CNN's app or online.
That's not like they're lifting the paywall to...
No, I mean, that would seem... public service oriented.
Well,
someone
says CNN will stream the debate live on their site without making you sign in.
Oh, well, that's good.
That's good.
If that's the case,
You all interrupted before I could quite finish this letter.
Mm. Okay, sorry.
We're on Fubo, a new paid over-the-top streaming service focused largely on sporting events.
Well, it is kind of a sporting event.
It's like a wrestling match.
Yeah, right.
You know, you need one of those NCAA charts where you have
the brackets.
Yeah. Right.
You know, I love the name Fubo. It has a sort of familiar ring to it. Kathy. What's so funny about that? Fubo. Kathy.
There's a
was the writer
for
from
it.
Fubo? It just sounded like it to me.
Sit, Fubo, sit.
Right.
That was Ubu, but
that's Ubu.
Close enough.
Kathy says, stream debate. CNN will stream the debate live on their site without making you sign in. Didn't we hear that somewhere?
Yeah, I just
Libby
said that.
Did said it.
But sorry.
The writer is...
Well, stop doing that, Libby.
Okay.
Right.
I'll stop reading the letters.
Yeah, Libby.
Yeah, sorry.
All right. So that is that. Let's move on to other stuff. So I want to go to the... The Radcliffe nomination. We talked, of course, about
how
Dan
is that pronounced?
Coates.
Is it pronunciation? The emphasis on the
rat
part. Rat part. Okay.
You know, the vermin that apparently has infested the city of Baltimore. Radcliffe, Trump's pick to lead the U.S. intelligence, faces headwinds in Congress. President Trump's announcement Sunday that he will nominate Representative John Ratcliffe, the Republican from Texas, as the next director of national intelligence drew immediate opposition from Senate Democrats and tepid support from key Republicans, an early indication that the junior congressman might not sail smoothly to confirmation. Current and former intelligence officials also say Ratcliffe is the least qualified person ever nominated to oversee the country's intelligence agencies and question whether he would use the position to serve Trump's political interests.
No.
Do you think? Senator Richard Burr, chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, which would vet Ratcliffe when the chamber returns from its summer recess, called the congressman to congratulate him. When the White House submits the official nomination, we will work to move it swiftly through regular order, Burr said in a statement. That fell short of a full-throated endorsement, congressional officials noted, and it did something to blunt remarks from Senate Majority Leader Charles Schumer, who from the Senate floor on Monday called Ratcliffe a three-term Tea Party congressman who, when he goes on television, appeals to the president's sense of stridency and partisanship. Representative Ratcliffe lacks the experience required to lead an intelligence agency, much less the entire intelligence community.
I'm sorry for bothering you with this show, because I have no more respect for anybody than for you and your pronunciation. But you keep pronouncing it Radcliffe, right, as opposed to Ratcliffe. I just wondered about the distinction.
I don't know what you're saying. I'm sorry.
I keep hearing you say Radcliffe.
A D instead of a T.
Oh, no, Radcliffe.
Rat. Okay, yeah. I just want to make that clear.
Radcliffe.
Yeah, you're fine.
So okay. isn't this the guy that kind of was a pit bull in the Mueller testimony?
Yes, he was unbelievably rude. I was shocked by how rude he was.
He was pushing that notion that the FBI was...
Right. It was all a shill.
It was, we had fabricated this whole investigation of Russia, and he hasn't recognized what everybody else in the national security community has stated profoundly, in that Russia did interfere with the 2016 election and continues to be trying to hack the elections in the U.S., and that he does not recognize on the record that that's an existential issue to our democracy, and he's taking over as the national security guy.
No, he likes strong leaders, so Putin's a strong leader. You know how that
is. Although this story really, when you read, you know, the Republicans who are in the leadership position in the Senate that has to approve his nomination, they are absolutely on the fence, and there may be some significant opposition within the Republican part of the Senate, and the Democrats will all be opposed to it. So it may not happen. It'll drag out. And then the funny thing is, then Trump gets to keep somebody in an acting position.
Except that it's supposed
there's
to
a debate
be the number
about
two.
That, right? Yeah.
The number two, Sue Gordon, who's a career intelligence official. She is the number two there. And by law, that person is supposed to move into
right.
the
he
action.
Right. He has somebody else in mind.
To which one
two.
Can only say so what? Yeah. So in other words, he's got actings all over the place. He doesn't listen to what anybody else is saying anyway. And then that's the end of it.
Well, Dan Coates' departure from the administration leaves very few people who are bipartisan and receive bipartisan support, which Dan Coates did. You talked about that, I'm sure, yesterday. But the more you surround yourself with sycophants who repeat to you your own policies and affirm whatever misdirected policies you might have, the more dangerous it gets, I think.
Yeah. He's it keeps making me scratch my already addled head and asking the following question. What could Coates have been thinking about when he took that job?
You know, I have the question because apparently Trump wasn't listening to Coates. Coates would tell him things again
absolutely
and again
not.
And again. So maybe it doesn't make any difference to have alternative viewpoints
exactly.
in the room. Maybe this guy, is the next person's going to come in and not be listened to as well. I mean, Trump's just going to go by his gut feelings on most decisions.
Fair enough.
Well, but Judy, it's almost clear now, right, that this guy is such a, as Mike says, sycophant, that it really won't be be a Coates-like dilemma, in which Coates offers sagacious advice and is clobbered for it or ignored for it. This guy's going to do exactly what he's told by the president.
And at least Coates was out there saying, making public pronouncements where the public would at least know that, oh, yes, the Korean nuclear buildup is still a concern.
So, absolutely right.
So those are important pieces of information for the public to know.
The interesting side aspect of this whole story is that Ratcliffe got Trump's attention because he's featured.
That's Ratcliffe.
Ratcliffe. Yeah. Got Trump's attention primarily because he's so frequently on Fox News. If people want to influence Trump, they go on Fox News, and then suddenly it becomes a tweet, and then it becomes policy. It's a backwards way to influence and lobby, but it works.
Well, in this case, if people want to influence Trump, they kiss his behind.
Right.
Well, they go on TV. He's watching Fox News in the morning during the executive time, and you can have a forum with the president and have him hear what you say, and then all of a sudden it becomes
his thoughts.
And
all you need to say
thoughts.
Is the president's right, and you'll become a cabinet member.
There you go.
Speaking of executive time, we need a little executive time to get some news and pay some bills and all that stuff. So we'll take a break, and when we come back, we will continue our conversation right here on WAMC. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. That is Herb Albert. You are hearing from the forthcoming album Over the Rainbow, which will be released September 20th. Herb Albert and Lenny Hall will be at the Egg in Albany, New York on August 4th. And to learn more, you can go to theegg.org or herbalpert.com.
Oh, cool. Wow. He can't be a spring chicken anymore.
No.
Right?
He was on the charts when I was a kid.
I know. That's cool. So yeah. The new album is Over the Rainbow, September 20th, and it's theegg.org, herbalpert.com. The playlist is posted on our website, wamc.org/roundtable. All right, let us go to other stories because there is, hey, you want to talk about the president and race? No, but I'm going to make you anyway. So the president continues, the race war. The article in the New York Times says today, Trump widens war on black critics while embracing inner city pastors. The president has widened his war with new attacks on Reverend Al Sharpton and other political opponents, even as he gathered his own African-American allies at the White House to defend him against charges of racism. In a third straight day of broadside attacks against black figures, Mr. Trump denounced Mr. Sharpton on Twitter as a con man who hates whites and cops, and again assailed Representative Elijah Cummings and his Baltimore-based district, drawing rebukes from Maryland Republicans as well as Democrats. I know this is all political sniping, but I do have to give high marks to Al Sharpton for his remark.
I thought it was great.
Which was, if I know I'm not a con man, Mr. President, because if I was, I'd be in your cabinet.
Yeah, that's
a great line.
It really was.
You know, from a political point of view, I think this just shows you what this president is all about.
Yeah.
So what he does is he combines his need to raise the racist flame, which he does constantly because that's his base, he thinks, and that's how he's going to get reelected, he thinks. But he also uses his pollsters very cleverly. I think that his attacks on Cummings have not gone well for him. I think this is a very stable, very decent man who Americans like a lot. Including guys like Meadows, you know.
You mean Cummings?
Cummings, yeah. Yes. That's correct.
Mark Meadows, who was one of the Tea Party leaders.
Yeah. Thanks, Judy, because that's right.
Elijah Cummings had in the past stood up for in saying that he was not a racist and that he was a dear friend of his.
Yeah, okay. And now we. I'm sorry, Libby, but now, just to put a period on this, now he goes out and he says to his pollsters, hey, this isn't working all that well. This is my premise. Who can we pick on who Americans, white Americans, aren't that enamored with?
Right.
Now, the fact of the matter is black Americans love Al Sharpton, but white Americans do not, in my opinion. Ever since Tawana Brawley and all of that kind of stuff, there have always been issues with him. So now the pollsters say, go after this guy, and that's what he does.
What's interesting, and I think this was a miscalculation, one more miscalculation on Trump's part, when he called Elijah Cummings' district rat-infested. There are 32,000 Jewish people who live in that district, and he has a great relationship with the Jewish community. And the Jewish community in Baltimore are really coming out and rallying around.
And by the way, it's not a bad district economically or demographically.
No, it's not. I mean, this is just for Trump. Black people equal slum equal rats equal subhuman.
Yes.
That's
crime.
It. That's right, yeah. And that's it. It's black people or people of color equal subhuman.
And
that's
when I say, I'm so sorry, Libby, but when I say demographically, before anybody takes the wrong kind of meaning from that, I mean economically demographically.
Well, I agree with your analysis right on, Alan, because I think that he did discover that Cummings was unassailable, that he was genuine and serious and honest and well-liked, and picked somebody who had flaws. And you're right. I mean, especially in our own listening area here in the Hudson Valley, there's people who are scarred and remember the Tawana Brawley incident, mm-hmm. where Al Sharpton sort of made his entry to the public view. But the real question I have, and I don't know if there's any polling yet on this, what has this changed? Has it moved the needle at all, either for or against Trump, or is it really, it's just like the Mueller testimony last week. Has it really changed anybody's opinion? Well, it seems like people don't change much.
Well, Mike, what you have to look at are not the Republican stalwarts, and you don't have to look at the Democrats who hate
them.
You have to look at those people in the middle. And when you take, so Cummings, of course, you're right, is unassailable, but he had to be assailed by Trump because he's gone after his
finances.
Information,
sure.
and his financial information, so therefore he became the target.
Well, but this is the second time he's gone after Cummings.
Yeah, for the same reason.
Right, and it's like, didn't he learn? And the answer is no, he didn't learn the first time. And I found it interesting, the article talks about Trump bringing his black coterie to, you know, inner city pastors. There were two of them. One who is Martin Luther King's niece, and he must be rolling in his grave given that she is so far right, and the other is another very far right black pastor, and he wouldn't let the media in. He usually lets the media in for these kinds of things to show how many people he has behind him, and he didn't, because he didn't.
Well, more and more,
many people.
More and more, the idea is to keep the media out of the room, no matter what, because we know that his unpopularity with the media, other than Fox, of course, is huge. Mm-hmm. And so that's why you're not seeing the briefings anymore. It's why you're not seeing the kinds of access that people might have had.
And you know, you hear all the, like, Mitch McConnell and all the Trump supporters say he's not a racist. I would like everybody to give us their definition of racism, because I've never known a racist who actually believed he was a racist or she was a racist.
Well, and also the dilution of the meaning of the word by the president calling Elijah Cummings a racist.
Right.
I mean, it's
yeah, it sounds like
it becomes nonsensical at that point, and it's scary because it is such a horrible thing.
Agreed.
To be a racist.
But I think it has been diluted because of all this. People don't fully appreciate how serious a term it is, and it's an allegation right up there with Nazism and other horrible positions, you know, when you are a racist.
Well, the problem in this country is, and it's a big problem, is that the country was founded on racism.
Right.
We know that. We know the importation of slaves, and we know that Jim Crow came after slavery was, quote, abolished, and we know that the prisons are filled unequally with people of color, and so there is a racist strain, for whatever it's worth, in the American psyche. There's no question about that. Now, are we in denial about that? Of course. Nobody wants to think that of themselves. But if you're a person of color in this country, you sure damn well know what your children are going to face and what you face in economically and job-wise and everything else in this country. So we do have this terrible strain of racism in the country, and and everybody wants to deny it because nobody wants to feel it. But there are those people who are really racist as opposed to subliminally racist.
Well, except for Ben Carson, he doesn't really recognize racism. You know, he doesn't seem to think he was ever really affected by the color of his skin. I think that, yes, that there are people who are really racist. You've got the Klan, you've got the far right, you've got, you know, all those folks. But I also think that you've got middle America, you know, who walk on the other side of the road, of the street. They cross the street when they see a black man walking towards them. You know, there's institutionalized racism that we are raised with from the minute we're as a white person, that we're raised with and we're born, we're not born with it, but we're raised with it, to fear the other. And people of color are definitely the other when you are a white person, but it goes beyond race. It also goes to xenophobia and ethnicity. I remember when Jews were the other in this country, and still are to a large extent. Irish were the other. Italians were the other. You know, we have some of these people are, you know, living in this false premise of we're real Americans because we're right white and we were here at the beginning. No, the Native Americans were here at the beginning.
You know, Libby, there's a lot of parsing that has to go on with what you've just said. I mean, you can say there's anti-Semitism in America. There is anti-Semitism in America. There's also anti-Italianism. Mm-hmm. And we know that, but it's not the same thing as what has happened. If we force
never said that.
I want to be clear on this. Right. If we force people into poverty, and we know that there's a relationship between, you know, poverty and doing things that one would not want to do. We know that there's a reality to how this whole thing works. It's awful. It's just awful.
And when you question the racism in America, you're called un-American.
And the current political debate is not helping. It's making everything worse.
Mm-hmm. How do you mean that, Judy? That's very interesting.
I think it's emboldening people who maybe were trying to advance or progress yeah. the cause in their own lives. I think it's emboldening people to say things. I see more incidents of hate crimes. Isn't that being documented?
Yes. Absolutely.
I think it's more out there in our political, and it's normalizing it. Just like the journalists are enemy of the people. I think. I mean, it's not at the same level of severity as of racism, but I think it's normalizing it, and that's one of the things we need to stand up and say, no, this is wrong. We can't just ignore it. We have to call it out for what it is.
Because, look, I've said this before. I think we all have. Make America Great Again is code for Make America White Again. And this all comes down to not that they think he's a Christian or the great savior or his economic policies are good. It all comes down to the fact that people are scared. That white folks will no longer be the majority in this country, and we finally have somebody, this is what's going on in their brains, who are standing up for white people, because just like the radical Christian right says they've been oppressed because I happen to live in maybe in their neighborhood and I'm married to my partner, and so just the fact that lesbians are there oppresses them, it's the same thing with white people who are fearful for the fact that they will no longer be in the majority in the next generation, and Donald Trump is standing up for us.
Well, that's what he brokers. He brokers fear so mm-hmm. well. I mean, and when you scare people into thinking that they're going to lose what they have, that they're in danger economically, in danger from violence, you know, fear. He stokes the fear about immigrants. People have this fear that people are going to come across the border and mm-hmm. not only steal their jobs, but rob their houses and cause harm
and rape their wives.
Right.
And it's just not true. But and statistically, you know, statistics show the opposite, but it is so effective, fear. You know, FDR said it, right?
Yeah. Well, look, Hitler traded on fear. All the great dictators of the world traded on fear.
Right.
And I see such a relationship between.
Yeah, fear, you
know,
and
the
hate.
One I'm looking at is Mussolini.
Yeah.
And the bombasted, mm-hmm. the bombast that he projected. And, you know, you can almost see these two guys standing next to each other in terms of the images. It's amazing.
So, but can you have faith in the ultimate virtue of the American public to see through it and to recognize justice and right and wrong? Ted Koppel has a really interesting op-ed, I don't know, somewhere today that talked about whether or not, you know, you trust the American people to finally realize into call racism for what it is, and to be fair and to see people as human beings and not as others.
That's an optimistic way to look at it, and that perhaps, and I, you're right, Alan, you should look at that middle, not the Democrats who are already against Trump and not mm-hmm. the Republicans who are, you know, swirling around him and supporting him no matter what. But what about the middle? Has it really moved the needle right
or
left?
What about the suburban person who bought a house in a mostly white area, you know, who now knows the difference between right and wrong, and you know, and has to have a little courage. And we know that the suburban housewives, for example, made a big difference in taking the congressional districts, making them blue. So will they be there? Is this racist thing going to work for Trump? That's the question.
Right. And I don't know the answer. And I mean, there must be some polling already on the Cummings and
you better believe
it. You know, and Joe, you mentioned his own polling. I mean, he right. probably has really, you know, a lot of polling going on. It's all secret, and he adjusts his
without
statements
question.
Without
right.
question. Yeah,
without question, you are right, Mike.
But maybe he treats his polling just like he treats his national security briefing.
I'm going to say I doubt that.
He goes with his gut.
I'm going to say
I doubt
that. Because
he pays for the polling.
That. Yeah, no, I'm he. No, that's
he
why.
Probably.
But wasn't there that time where the internal polling was bad, and then he just fired the people that were
yeah,
giving him
well,
the internal
the
polling?
Thing.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah. He that's what I was trying to say.
I mean, that was just a couple weeks ago.
Right. He just he hires pollsters who are going to give him the results that he wants, just like this Ratcliffe is going to give him the intelligence briefings that he wants to hear, that North Korea's doesn't have a bomb, Iran does have a bomb, you know, so he's going to surround himself, and he has always surrounded himself with sycophants and people who are going to say he's the best thing since sliced bread, and that they agree with him. And
well, my analysis with Sharpton a few seconds ago says different. Says that when it comes down to the insidious reasons that pollsters can be used, he listens because he knows what will bring him what he needs.
That's right. But as long as it gives him the response that he wants to hear. He can hire five different pollsters, and the one that gives him the response that he wants to hear is the one he'll listen to.
I thought Sharpton, he went after Sharpton just because Sharpton tweeted something. Yeah. I thought he was just reacting to.
And he knew Sharpton.
Well, that's
was
where
going
we
to
disagree. I think he knows that. I think he knows that what I said before about Sharpton's huge appeal to black voters, which he is never going to have, and to white the antithesis to white voters, potential voters. I think he knows what he's doing, and I think he's listening to his pollsters.
And with that, we're out of time.
Whoa!
Many thanks, everybody, for being with us this morning, Libby. And Mike and Judy, thank you. Good to have the old gang back.
It's great.
Very nice. Good to have you here. Alan, thank you very much. And we'll be back after this short break.